Late this morning because of the rain, so we'll just go ahead and get started and hopefully some folks will show up as we go. All right, let's go ahead and start this morning. It's a pleasure this morning to welcome Sean Martin to our Sunday school class and to our church. Sean is the church outreach director, coordinator for Human Coalition. Yeah, one of those things. So it's a pleasure to have Sean with us today. He's going to talk with us some about the ministry of Human Coalition. And as I mentioned in the email this week, this is something that our congregation has been connected to for a long time. And so it's wonderful to kind of get an update. There's some real changes that have happened with the organization that was once known as Real Choices is now Human Coalition. And so it's just an opportunity for us to kind of get an update on that and to really be encouraged by the work that's happening here in Dallas-Fort Worth, but not just here, but really across the country. I'm encouraged to have Sean with us this morning. Sean, I just learned, is the father of 11 children, and so he's someone obviously committed to life, not just in the abstract, but practically. So I'm glad for that, and it's great to have Sean here. Sean's a pastor, was in active ministries at a church for a long time, and has now been with Real Choices or Human Coalition for the last 4 years. So. Come on up. It's great to have you.
Appreciate it. Probably need to turn this on, huh? That would be helpful.
Is that better? All right. I'm going to pass these out. Can I have some help passing these out? Just so everybody. Perfect. Thank you very much. So we're all looking at some of the same information. I just gave them all away. Now I got to find another one. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Basically what I want to do today is take a high-level look at our organization and then bring it down locally as much as I can to make it real hands-on and practical for you all so we're not too far up in the clouds. We have an organization that is very young but has grown tremendously over the past several years. The organization that I work for, Human Coalition, was started as an organization in 2009, but didn't go full-time until 2012, February 1st, 2012, with three guys starting it. I joined a couple of months later, and it has grown tremendously. When we originally started, we had a pretty small vision of what was going to happen, what we thought God was calling us to do, and over the years, God has continued to show us problems and hand us solutions, and the organization has continued to grow to the point that it is today. But before I dive into all of that, I want to take a step even further back from our organization and just ask a couple of quick questions. Who can tell me what the leading cause of death in America is? Okay, yeah. That's not the typical answer you get when you ask that question. The government tells us the leading cause of death in America is heart disease, followed very closely by cancer, both taking between 500,000 and 600,000 lives a year. Abortion takes twice that. It is alarming when we put it into perspective what we're doing in our country, where we literally, the leading cause of death in America is the intentional killing of our own children. I mean, when you phrase it like that, it changes your perspective. And it's not just the leading cause of death. It's the leading cause of death by a factor of two. And so it's a little bit eye-opening when we realize that and we wonder why our culture is where it is. Well, because we celebrate this and call it choice, and our culture then follows what we're doing. And so we have taken this command to do something about it, and we dig into the scriptures. We have passages we've memorized, are kind of our key foundational verses come out of Proverbs 24, 10 to 12. We generally quote 11 to 12, but 11 to 12 is... does anybody know what 11 before I? What's that? Rescue those who are being led away to death. Hold back those staggering towards slaughter. If you say, surely we did not know this, does not he who weighs the heart consider it? And he who keeps your soul, does he not know it? And will he not render to man according to his deeds? We have no excuse. Those who are being led away to death, drawn toward death, the word drawn there is literally like if you're leading a horse. It's literally kind of a pulling, dragging, drawn toward. And the stumbling is somebody who's out of control. We have big heads in the Martin family, And that's a disadvantage when you're a child learning to walk. So have you all seen that, though, when a kid gets up and he's learning to walk and he kind of tips, the head goes, and where the head goes, the body follows, and they start going, and you know they're going to fall down. What are you going to do when you see them going down? What do? Hold them back. Don't let them go down. That's the image. It's somebody who's staggering, out of control, stumbling toward the slaughter. That's the image we get. It's somebody who's being drawn, not according to their own will. They're being taken, or they're falling. They're out of control. And our call is clear in that passage to stop it. Deliver them. Hold them back. Don't let it happen. We hear all the time people saying things like, I understand this is an issue, but it's just not what I'm called to. Okay. People say that about adoption too. I understand that's an issue, but it's not what I'm called to. Okay, maybe you're not called to it, but you're kind of commanded to it. We are, everyone. It doesn't mean you have to be full-time employed doing this. It doesn't mean you have to go and adopt a bunch of kids. But it means we have a role to play as the church, and we don't really have an excuse. We can't get out of it. And so when we look at passages like Romans, or like Proverbs 24, we look at passages like Colossians 1. We're going to be looking at Colossians 1 today. We have memorized 13 through 20. It's a little bit later than where you all are. But it's a clear call that everything is under Christ's supremacy, everything, and that he has created everything, all of it, and it's for him and by him, and therefore we have to use it all and protect it all for his glory. And so that's the approach we take when we look at life in general. We look at it and say we have a command to carry out the protecting, the preserving of innocent life in all capacities. We tend to focus on the abortion issue, that life in the womb. And so we do that through a variety of ways. One of the things we discovered early on, and this is where you can open up the little trifold to that center section. One of the things we discovered early on was that we have women who are looking for an abortion, and you have pro-life pregnancy centers all over the country, between 2,000 and 3,000. Some are probably around 2,500 of them. But the women who are looking to abort don't talk to Christian pregnancy centers, because why would you, right? I mean, okay, I'm a father of a bunch of kids with special needs, just so you know. So when I kind of make a comment or a question, I wait for a response. So that's your fair warning. I don't do rhetorical, because if I do rhetorical, they answer anyway. So I stop doing rhetorical. So I like involvement. I like, make sure you're with me. Hear what I'm saying? Make sense?
Yes.
Thank you. All right. I lost what I was saying now. Anyway, so they're not talking to each other. So we have to solve this problem. So the original idea, the original vision, the great dream of this organization was, if we can do marketing and connect with these women who are looking, have them make a phone call and just send that phone call directly to the pregnancy center, we win. We let the pregnancy center do what the pregnancy center does. We connect the women who need their services to them. We step out of the way and we win. And we started that up. We tested it. And guess what? It didn't work. 42% of the phone calls we sent to the pregnancy centers got answered. 42. So 6 out of 10 calls didn't get answered at the pro-life pregnancy center. You say, well, why is that? That's crazy. Were you sending calls at midnight? No, we were sending during business hours. But the challenge with many, many, many pro-life pregnancy centers is that they're small organizations. They are underfunded. They're volunteer dependent. And if the volunteer who's supposed to answer the phones that day doesn't show up, it's very difficult to get somebody to fill that in at the last moment. Or if you need them, if you get an extra client that comes in, you pull that person off the desk and you put them in a room with that client, and the phones just don't get answered because you have a more important need facing you right now. You just don't have the capacity to do the things you need to do. You don't have money to hire somebody to sit there, so you're basing it on a volunteer because you're underfunded. And so it's very, very difficult for these pregnancy centers to manage what they have, much less the increase that we bring. And so there's this massive problem. We had to try to figure out, how do you fix that problem? And so we came up with a lot of different ideas, batting them around, and we settled on, let's start our own call center. And so we started our own call center. We outsourced it first, and we now run it out of our offices up in Plano, where we answer the phones. Anytime we have ads running, we have people there answering the phones. And so as long as we're marketing, we're answering phones, and now we answer 98% of the calls that come in or something like that. And we set appointments at those pregnancy centers for them. And we thought, now Now we've solved the problem. We've connected with the woman. We've answered the phone. We've set an appointment. We get out of the way. Problem solved. And we were very excited about that. So this is, sorry, I should be referencing this. So you go from the green to the marketing. That blue is the contact center. We call it contact center, not a call center, because we do texts and chats, and we do all kinds of stuff. And then we go into the clinic. So we set the appointment at the clinic, and we get out of the way, and we let the clinic do what the clinic does, and we're all happy, except we discovered another problem. Those women who don't talk to the Christian pregnancy center because they want an abortion, the Christian pregnancy center doesn't know what to do with them when they walk in the door because they don't talk to those women normally. That's not what they're trained to do. They're trained to talk to the woman who's kind of on the fence, who's not sure what she does. They do fantastic with those clients. But the ones who've already decided, I want to have an abortion, they have no experience or training talking to them. So we would send these clients, they would show up for their appointment, and we would get calls from pregnancy centers complaining to us that, what are you doing sending me a woman who wants an abortion? Well, wait, what? I'm confused. Why is that a problem? Well, she's mad at us because we don't provide an abortion. Okay, first of all, we told her on the phone, we always tell them on the phone, we're not an abortion clinic. We're honest, we're up front. We're not an abortion clinic. We're not gonna refer you to an abortion clinic. Here's all the services we provide. We believe we can help you for these reasons. We get them in. And sometimes in the midst of the crisis, they don't hear that. They don't remember that. They're focused on what they want. They miss it, but we do, like, that's literally a fireable offense. You don't tell somebody on the phone, you don't work for us very long, because that's a critical piece to us. And so these women would show up. So, okay, we've had pregnancy centers stop working with us because they said the clients you send are too hard. We've had pregnancy centers stop working with us because they say, well, we tell our clients we're rescuing 80 to 90% of the babies who are brought through our door, but with these clients, it's down to 40 or 50%. I can't raise money on those numbers. Those are things we've heard. So we have to figure out, okay, how do we fix that problem? Because that's clearly a problem. So we have these women who are calling, we're answering the phones, we're setting appointments, but we have no control over what happens in that clinic of these 2,500 clinics that are around the country. How do we solve that problem? How do we help them figure out what the best practices are? We are testers by nature. This is what we do. We test everything. And so in the marketing, we'll test things like we put an exclamation point on one of our sentences on the ad that we had online. We saw a 35% lift in the number of people who clicked on that ad because of an exclamation point. Human nature is fascinating. So our testing all revolves really around God has designed us in certain ways, and we're trying to figure out how we react to what he's given us. People sometimes get uptight about, you use all these business terms and business practices. It's not very spiritual. We believe it absolutely is. God has made us. Marketing, all marketing is discovering how God has wired us and how we can get people to react to what we have. That's what I believe marketing is. And so, and I'm the guy who hates being sold something. So, but I appreciate people trying to figure out how God has designed us. So we have this marketing team that tests everything. We have this call center. We test scripts and how to get people to come through the door. And then we have these clinics where we can't test anything because we don't have any control over what's happening in the clinic until we went to the genius of all genius people who have this business that goes across this country and even outside of this country, who everywhere you go in their business, every door you walk in, you get the exact same thing. Who is it? Chick-fil-A. It's the, because McDonald's, I've had experience with McDonald's and it's actually not the same. Franchise ownership is critical in that. But Chick-fil-A, everywhere you go, you get the same great chicken sandwich, the same My Pleasure, the good, you know, sweet tea, and you're happy as can be. And so we had a meeting with some of their executives, and we said, okay, here's our dilemma. You guys are the genius, the masters at this, but we have no control over these 2,500 pregnancy centers, but how do we bring some uniformity to them? How do we do some testing there to help solve this problem so that they are prepared to talk to this client that we're bringing? And they said, it's a great idea, it's a great plan, you're never going to do it. We said, that's the wrong answer. We have to do it because over 3,000 children are dying every day. We have to solve this problem. And so they said, well, the only way you're going to do it is if you have one of your own clinics. You have this marketing lab where you're testing all this stuff. You have this call center lab where you're testing all this stuff. You need a clinic lab where you can start testing. Figure out the distribution after that, but today you need a lab. And we said, we didn't want to start a call center. We certainly don't want to run a clinic. We knew nothing about running a clinic. There's a theme in our organization, too. When I started, I was employee number 5. We have over 100 today. And they brought me in out of the church. I was a pastor. Bring me in, and they say, okay, we need you to work with all these pregnancy centers to help figure out how they're running and help support them and share with them what we're learning. We need you also to start a call center because none of us know anything about starting a call center, to which I said, including me, but that's okay. So we started the call center. We got that running. We brought it in-house. And then we said, well, we're gonna take the guys at Chick-fil-A. We're going to take their advice. We're going to bring on a clinic, or we're going to start our own. And so we threw it out to our network of pregnancy centers, and we said, who would be crazy enough basically to give us your clinic? We want a lab. We want to test things. We want to do it. We need to operate the clinic. We need to own it. So who would be willing to basically give us your organization? And we were shocked. There were about 5 or 6 that said, we're willing to talk about that. And 2 of them in 2014 went through that whole process. The first one, March 7th of 2014, was Real Choices in Grapevine. They literally, their board voted themselves out of existence. They gave us their organization, all of its assets, and stepped back from their roles. And the beauty is that board of directors is more involved today than they were when they were the actual board of directors. They've gotten more engaged. They're doing more fundraising, more connections, helping with events. They're incredible. They're far more engaged now than they were. But the theme that continued itself was, none of us know how to run a clinic. Sean, why don't you go down to Grapevine and run a clinic? So I went to Grapevine, and we tried to figure out how to run a clinic, and we began to test things. We began to test all kinds of ideas because, again, we were these crazy testers. And so we would test things like, what happens if we put a volunteer in a room versus a paid staff person in the room? And we looked at the numbers, and the numbers were scary. If you put a client in a room with a volunteer, it was pretty much a death sentence. And so I made the very unpopular decision that volunteers would no longer see these particular clients. There were other clients they could see, but just not these particular clients. People don't like when you fire volunteers, but we had to because it was life or death. And so we looked at other options, other things we could do. We didn't think we could really do what needed to be done with volunteers that we could do with staff. And so we did things like that. It's grown a ton since then. We're now testing fun things in our clinics like atmospherics. Do you know how important the atmosphere is to your mindset? Every major retailer knows this and they use it. Why do you think the lights are so bright in every store you go into? And why do you think you're bothered when you go into that little convenience store and it's dim and feels dirty and you don't want to buy anything there? But when you go into a place that's really bright, I was in Lowe's last night, bright, wide aisles, fantastic. They have it's like me and I'm in a candy store. So every time I go into Lowe's, don't tell my wife this, I walk past this little desk where they make keys and things, and all the door locks and everything are around it. What most people don't know is right behind that desk are all the tools that have been returned. And they leave them there. Eventually they put them out on a shelf somewhere, but they'll mark down the price really low. And I always look. Somewhere I picked that up along the way. And I come home with random tools. My wife's like, I didn't know you needed that. Like, it was a great deal. But they control the atmosphere to make you want to buy things. So we tested something. We did some research, and a woman who is, and this is going to be shocking, I know, a woman who is considering abortion and goes through with it tends to be carrying anxiety. They're incredibly anxious, overwhelmed, panicked even. And a woman who ends up choosing life has come down from that anxiety and they're very calm. They're able to make a better decision. So we tried to figure out, how can we manipulate the atmosphere to help them calm down? One of the things we discovered was shades of blue are calming colors. And so we painted the room here in Grapevine resolute blue. It's a Sherwin-Williams color. If you want your kids to sleep, paint the room that color. It's calming. And then we put a coffee table in the middle of the room. We put pillows on the couch where the woman sat, because every time they come in, they grab the pillow and squeeze it, hold it against their chest. And then we got rid of the fluorescent lights and we put in lamps. Those are the only 4 changes we made. Color of the wall, lamps instead of fluorescents, table in the middle, pillows on the couch. And we saw an 18% jump in life decisions in that room compared to the room right next to it. It's the only things we changed with the atmosphere. We then took that test. We tested it in Raleigh, where we have a clinic. We tested it in Pittsburgh, where we have a clinic, and we got very similar results. We're now painting all of our rooms that color. And so it's things like that that we test all the time. I want to make sure we have time for questions, too, so I'm going to fly through these next few parts, which is, like, you know, my job. So we have these clinics where we're continuing to test, and the numbers are driving higher and higher. We've saved over 250 babies here in DFW in the last year. We have a mobile clinic here. So we have five clinics that we own and operate. Two are here in DFW, two in Pittsburgh, one in Raleigh. We're about to add a second one there, and we're about to add Atlanta before the end of the year. So we'll be up to seven by the end of the year. And then we're already looking at 2017. We're adding Cleveland and a few other places. So we're continuing to grow operating our own clinics because we discovered that the folks at Chick-fil-A were correct. We don't have any leverage to distribute what we learn. We share what we learn with everybody, but very few people have the ability to implement what we learn. And so it becomes a challenge. And the next thing we have on that wheel is the continuum of care. The continuum of care is the idea that once a woman comes through our clinic, we don't want to just say, okay, we rescued the baby, we're abandoning you now, and we're going to leave you alone. No, she has a world of needs around her that caused her to be in this position in the first place. How can we help alleviate some of that pressure? What can we do in the clinic, in the moment, to help alleviate some of that pressure? So it could be anything from, I don't have the ability to pay my electric bill. I don't have a job. I don't have insurance. We can meet those needs in the clinic, in the moment, or at least get the process started to help alleviate some of that pressure. We can get you signed up for Medicaid. We can get you your electric bill paid. We can do some of those things right there on the spot. So we go through a couple of processes right there in the clinic, or a couple of stages. And then stages 3 and 4, we really want to include the church. This is brand new in Pittsburgh. We are brand new here. We just tested it in Pittsburgh earlier this year. We're launching it now in DFW. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, we moved somebody into this role. And so the third and fourth stages involve the church. What are you all doing? What ministries do you have that we can then leverage for this woman and her family? What can you do? How can you help meet her needs? And ultimately, stage 4 is discipleship. We want them connected to a church. So are there people in the church who can say, I'm willing to be trained to be a mentor to this family, to this woman in particular, but her family as well, to walk through this continuum of care process to help her stabilize her life so that she chooses life not only for this child, but ongoing through discipleship, her entire mindset begins to change. And so how do we make that process happen? And so we're building that continuum of care now, which leads into the next phase, which is the church. Church outreach, which is my job, I oversee this church team. And so we have a group of folks who work directly with churches and denominations. So we work with churches in a variety of ways. We're creating a toolkit where pastors can use to talk about this issue. A lot of pastors don't talk about this issue. I'm thankful that the guys like Josh do, but most don't. They don't want to touch this issue. It's very difficult. How do you preach on the sacredness of human life, knowing that there's a very high likelihood there's somebody in your congregation who's listening to you, who's had an abortion, and it's going to dig up that pain? How do you do that? Well, we have tools to help do that. We have ways to help talk about this issue that are grace-filled. And so how do we... So we're building a toolkit around that to help train pastors to talk about this issue. We have videos and Sunday school curriculum and small group stuff, and we have all kinds of stuff, and we're looking beyond that to build out a lot of other things, which I won't get into. So that's part of what we do, is resourcing the church, supporting the church. But then on a higher level, we're working it with denominations and institutions. So I was in Raleigh a few weeks ago, met with the president of Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, and they want to host things on their campus. They want to make this a campus-wide conversation as they train the next generation of Baptist pastors. We have an agreement, a three-year agreement we just signed with the largest African-American denomination in the country, the Church of God in Christ. And so they're somebody like PCA who has a very clear statement on the sacredness of human life. Very clear. PCA's statement is fantastic. They have a similar statement. Their conviction was, we're not doing anything. We say it, we believe it, we don't do anything. And so they want to activate their entire denomination to do something about it. And so we've begun fleshing that out and working with them to train the next their folks, not just their pastors, but their leaders, get them involved in the fight. They're doing some work with us in Raleigh right now, which is fantastic. Which leads us into the last section, which is our legal team. The legal team is kind of code language. This is going to be online, right? So we're going to do everything legally, ethically, morally sound to shut down abortion clinics. We're going to target them one at a time. We've begun that work already. That's all I'm going to say. But we're going after a particular abortion provider in a particular city that we work in, and we're doing it in a way that allows for others to understand the dangers of what they could be walking into, and helps us to gather information at the same time to use as we pursue shutting down that clinic. So that's kind of the entire wheel of our organization. Locally here, with our clinic in Real Choices, or in Grapevine, I'm going to quit using that name. Our clinic in Grapevine, which is the Cura Women's Care Clinic, we're branding all of them with the same name. The idea is to build a national competitor to Planned Parenthood. And so this clinic, since we began working with them, has seen almost seven times as many clients. They're rescuing over three times as many children. The numbers continue to rise, 250 this year. And so it continues to go up and up and up. There are over 18,000, almost 19,000 abortions in the DFW Metro every year. And that number is actually down over the last few years. Our goal is to make that zero, ultimately. I don't know how many of you know this, but the case, the landmark case in 73, Roe v. Wade, was started here in Dallas. We want to end it here in the DFW Metro first, ideally, and then carry it across the nation. And so there are a lot of ways that we're inviting people to get involved here locally. They include things like holiday connections. How do you connect with our clients so that you can begin building a relationship with them? And so that would include things like providing a Thanksgiving meal, providing Christmas gifts, inviting them to your place, and ultimately, hopefully, getting them here into the church, into a worship setting, and ongoing discipleship. And so holiday connections is one of those ways we're inviting people to get involved. There's also, we just pushed this back. It was going to be in the spring. It's probably going to be in the fall now. But we're doing, obviously we do fundraisers all the time. But one of the things we're changing up, our clinic in Raleigh has done this for years. We have a fundraising event, but it's even more so, it's a discipleship event. It's so neat. I don't know what we're going to call it here. We have a name for it there, but we're going to call it something different here. But the idea is you go through an obstacle course, and I put that in quotes because it's not really a physical obstacle course. It's a mental obstacle course. So it takes you through a journey of the challenges of our typical client. Things like you're working 40 hours a week in a minimum wage job and you got bills to pay. So which ones are you going to pay? Because you don't have enough to pay them all. And you have to stand there on the spot and make decisions. Well, if I don't pay this, what's going to happen? If I choose to pay that, I can't pay this. And it's stuff that some of us deal with, but not to the extent that a lot of our clients deal with. So things like that. How do you provide childcare while you're working for 40 hours a week? You can go to a daycare, you can have family, but what if you don't have family? You got to pay for it. I mean, it just becomes very, very complicated. The role of men is one of the stations. You go and you learn about the role of men. Did you know 81% of women who have an abortion say if the man in their life would have supported them, they wouldn't have done it? 81%. This isn't a women's issue. This is a man's issue. At least as much as it is a woman's issue, if not more. There's a whole history behind that I'd love to get into, but I will refrain. But this is an issue that affects every one of us. I think there's probably some of us in the room who personally have been touched by this issue. And if you have, if you hear nothing else I say today at all, hear this: where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more. Where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more. The word is hyperabounds. It's overflowing. It's like a little stream of sin in a Niagara Falls of grace. Where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more. In Jesus Christ, you are forgiven. If you don't hear anything else, hear that, please. Because that's the truth. That's the good news of the gospel. It affects every one of us. But some of us are probably sitting here saying, I don't know anybody, I've never had this issue, never touched my life. But the reality is it probably has and you just don't know it, because it's not something we talk about. It's not something many of us want to talk about. And so we keep it to ourselves and we don't say much. And so I would say think about it, pray about it, ask God to show you where it has touched your life, because I'm guessing it has. I'm guessing it has, because it has for most of us. I'm going to stop right there because I want to honor the time, and looking at that clock, but I'm realizing I'm not sure that clock is quite so accurate. but it's close on the minutes. So how much time do we have?
We've got about
15
minutes.
Oh, great. More than I thought. I thought I had about four. All right. So I will stop there and leave some room for questions. It's Latin for care. So we want to create this national brand that would be competitor to Planned Parenthood. We looked at a lot of names. We looked at a whole lot of names, nauseatingly a lot of names. And so many of them are taken. I mean, how do you pick a name in an industry that's caring for people? And so this is where we landed. Mm-hmm. Right.
So what about how much time is given to the client to discuss options? So the woman has presented to her in such a way that there are resources. Mm-hmm.
All you care about is the baby. Yeah. So we do. We refer to adoption agencies. We are not directly involved with the adoption process. So we do. Every one of our clinics has their own relationships with local agencies. One of the things we're exploring right now is trying to figure out, probably not even supposed to be talking about this, but the legal ramifications of us coordinating with churches. How do we make this, take the agency out of it, because the cost is overwhelming for so many families, and work directly with churches and attorneys and social workers within churches to begin to just facilitate that process. We'd still step out of the way and let the process work, but how do we do that to keep the cost down and make sure, to the best of our ability, they're getting into a Christian home? That would be ideal. Go ahead. This is a fascinating study in the psychology of somebody in crisis. And I think, this is my own theory, I think there's a lot to do with public shame versus private shame. So the private shame of adoption, we believe every woman carries that with them, or a large majority of them do. But that seems more bearable than allowing yourself to grow, and everybody around you knows you're pregnant, and then you place that child for adoption. Now everybody knows what you did, and there's very public shame that goes with that. And so I think that's a lot of the psychology of it. There's a lot of other factors as well. They know they're gonna grow attached to their child if they don't abort, and so they know they won't be able to place that child for adoption. And so they're struggling with, I know myself, I know how much I'm gonna attach, and so placing that child won't happen, and now I'm gonna bring this child up in this environment that I don't want them in. And so it's a very difficult situation. So yes, we do. You asked about the appointment. Appointments are generally around 90 minutes. That's obviously pretty flexible. The continuum of care person will enter the appointment. If there are specific things that we need to help them with, we will introduce that person in the first appointment while they're there. The specifics of in the clinic and those relationships, I don't know the details, but they probably do. If they don't, they will be, because that, like I said, that continuum of care, they've always had relationships where they've been able to refer to and connect with, but we're going to really formalize that process and tighten it up so it's not just a, you know, depends. Because if one of our concerns is always, if this person who's sitting in this role is suddenly gone, how do we duplicate that service? Well, the only way to do that is to formalize the process. Right now, a lot of stuff is in people's heads that we don't have formalized. And so moving this person into that role is going to formalize that process. What other questions? No, really? There was somebody over here. There's a hand. Can you say that again, the first part? Denominationally, as far as working at the higher levels of the denomination, the only one we've been able to get any traction with is the Church of God in Christ. Others have just not been open to doing anything at the denominational level. So, no, I mean, we haven't. We're hoping that we're going to be getting some traction with one other in particular this year. We're making some headway, but it's an uphill battle with any denomination. It's very bureaucratic. There's a lot of organizations that are doing pieces of what we're doing. There's none that we know of that have put all these pieces together. There's none that we know of that are doing the testing and innovation we're doing. We have been just tremendously blessed with a leader, first of all, who has a vision that's so much bigger than, well, I shouldn't say that. He's willing to listen. He's willing to listen. I'm not talking about listening to God. He's willing to listen to God because his vision, and he'll admit this, was very small going into this. And as I said earlier, and as the Lord has opened up problems and presented solutions, he's been very open to allowing it to happen. So he says it all the time, God's the CEO of this thing. We're just following along. So as far as we know, the answer is no. We don't know of any other organization. We are, at this point, one of, if not the biggest pro-life group in the country. And that's a sad statement because you're facing a, you know, $1.5 billion giant, not to mention all the other smaller abortion providers. Yes. You looked familiar. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And it's a tragedy. I mean, we see it every day, and it's painful to watch. Yeah, that brochure that you have has in the back of it, there should be a, let me see which part it's on. Yeah, the green section. There is also in the local church involvement, there is an email there for somebody who's on our church team. If you want to get involved, you can email her. You can also go to our website, and there is a volunteer form you can fill out and plug it in. And then our folks will follow up with you, and we'll figure out kind of what your gifts and skills are and where you fit, and we'll figure it out and get you plugged in. It's a great question. I appreciate that. Yep.
I know the Roman Catholics have always been, from what I know, on the forefront of the whole issue. And are you connecting with them? Are they coming in with your vision, coming to
help? Very interesting question. Some things are changing. I am very close with the Catholic Pro-Life Committee of Dallas. We're getting to know the folks in Fort Worth. Dallas has been pretty much the leader in the nation as far as their Catholic Pro-Life Committee in the Diocese of Dallas. They do some things very, very well. They have sidewalk counselors outside of every abortion clinic every day, every minute that they're doing abortions. They're trying to intercept people. They're praying. It's fantastic. In fact, we had a woman on Thursday night that came to our clinic who had been to an abortion clinic, and somebody climbed the fence and was talking over the fence to her, inviting her to come talk and to pray, and she did. She left and came and then came to our clinic. Fantastic. There were two people from the Catholic Pro-Life Committee at the thing, and they came up to me afterwards and said, I know what clinic she was at, and I know who it was. I said, how do you know that? The way she described it, I know exactly what it was. And that clinic, praise God, is now shut down, that abortion clinic. So she would have been one of their last victims, but she didn't. So yes, we have a good relationship. Some of the same challenges with other denominations, they have their own structure. This is the way they do things. So figuring out how to work together is somewhat challenging. But some of their folks are incredibly open, and we've shared information. And so yeah, we continue to try to flesh out what that relationship looks like, because it is challenging. They have been leading the way for a long time, and we as Protestants have been sitting on our hands for a long, long time. So, but quoting them, we've been leading in some areas, but if you look at their pregnancy centers, the Catholic pregnancy centers, they are more underfunded than the Protestant ones. And you have this Catholic Church that has all this money, but they're, it's a strange, strange thing. So there's some frustrations on, for them as well on their end. Even when they hear that, they get frustrated. You all have been leading this, oh, not the way we should be. Well, that's great. I'm glad you feel that way. Let's do more. But yeah, it's they've definitely been the leaders, and we're doing what we can to partner with them. So I saw another hand, I thought. Yeah, there have been some fascinating things happening. The last people often, when we talk about our tagline, which is on the front of this, underneath the name of the organization, says "Rescuing Children, Serving Families." We actually have a third piece of that tagline, which is on our business cards, which we don't generally put on other things, and it just says at the end of that, "Ending abortion." That's our ultimate goal. We want to end it. We don't want this to drag on forever, and we believe we can end it. People think, this has been with us for 40 years, it's legal, there's no way we're going to be able to end this, and we say that's so not the God we serve. We serve a God that can do anything. And so when we look back at guys like William Wilberforce, who came into Parliament at the age of 24, I think he was young and brash and arrogant, and he was an interesting guy. But quickly, the Lord got a hold of him and gave him these two great ends, these two great things that he had to go after, one of which was what he called the Reformation of Manners. Great Britain was a vile place at the time, and they around that area, they did all kinds of things like dealing with cruelty to animals and public beatings and hangings, and I mean, there were all kinds of things. There was debauchery, and I mean, it was very public and very ugly. So they did their best to clean those things up. But at the same time, this other end of it was ending the slave trade. And he, from the time he was convicted of this to the time he died, was about 40 years. And he saw it 3 days before he died, slavery made illegal in Great Britain. That was an institution that was ingrained in the culture for over 5,000 years. Slavery was just a part of life, always was. And it was ingrained in the economy of the nation and the world. You didn't see it in England very much. They didn't have slaves running around in England very much. They were mostly in the Indies on the plantations with the sugar and the, and so it was something that wasn't seen, so people didn't feel like it was a big problem, and the government knew economically it would be devastating to end it. And yet in his lifetime he saw it happen. When we look at that and we say, okay, so how does that, similar to what we're doing today, we look at the issue of abortion. It's been legal for just 40 years. And so how, well, 43, but how, what can we do to begin to unwind that? What signs are there that it's happening? In the last 2 years, there have been over 400 pieces of legislation put forward, over 200 passed at the state level, restricting access to abortion. It's the most in any 2 year or 10 year period, for that matter, in American history. We're making massive amounts of progress, and we in Texas are on the forefront of that, of course, with HB2 a couple of years ago and the Supreme Court striking down some of those provisions that would have been fantastic. And a lot of people became very disheartened after the Supreme Court did that. We're not, for two reasons. One, we still made progress, and we learn from every piece of legislation that we put forward, even when it fails, and we learn how to make it better the next time. But the second reason we're not disheartened is because we never put our trust in the legislature or the Supreme Court anyway. No matter who's sitting on the bench, we know who's on the throne. We know he loves life. He's the author of life, and we're going to win in the end. God is going to make this happen. We believe that. We believe it's going to happen in our lifetime. And so we continue to encourage organizations and work with organizations who are putting forth legislation. We continue to work within our clinics to take clients away from the abortion providers. And the way I see my role in our organization is we work with churches, and the church is the venue, is the organization, is the thing that God has given us to change the culture. And if the church begins to talk about this issue, which historically we don't, if we begin to push this issue, we begin to care for people and love people in the way that God has commanded us to. You know, there's all these different words in Greek for love, but there was only one that God saw fit to define for us, and that's the word agape. We throw that word around. Agape, it's selfless love. It's God-like love. That's such an inadequate definition of that word. We look at 1 Corinthians 13. Spend some time reading it. And reading what love is and is not. God has gripped my heart on this in the last few months, and he won't let it go. And he's convincing me more and more every day that I have no idea what it means to love people. None. Maybe that's because I'm not as sanctified as you. But I think we all can use some work in this area, because when it talks about love never fails, the end of that, and yet we see the divorce rate in the church is as high as it is in the public, and even among pastors, it's just as high. It's painful to look at these things and say, how is it that marriages are falling apart within the church? How is it that the outside the church, people are looking at us and saying, y'all are judgmental, you're hypocritical, I don't feel safe there. Why is it? If we're going to, you brought out the preacher in me now. Why is it that when Jesus tells us that they're going to know you're my disciples if you love one another, and yet the whole world, not the whole world, I'm painting with a broad brush, often the world will look at us in the church and say how hypocritical we are and how much we chew up our own and how we don't treat each other well and they don't feel safe coming into our midst. And yet when we look at the early church and the way they loved each other and cared for each other and people were flocking to them, and it may not have been for great theological reasons at first, right? They may not have been coming because they were running to Jesus, but they may have been coming because I know I'm going to be cared for in this group. I know I'm going to be loved in this group. And I don't mean that to excuse sin or wipe away sin in any way. I believe the holiness of God demands we make an account for that. And so people have to truly understand grace and truly understand the cost of sin and truly understand what God has done for us in Christ. So all of that is true, but if we can begin to really love these folks who are looking to have an abortion, or maybe who did have an abortion, and we still love them and care for them and offer them everything we have, including Christ, I believe the culture begins to see that and change. They respond to that. So I will step out of the pulpit now.
Let's do one more question.
All right. Yeah, so we do have some we don't do it in the clinic. And this goes back to our thought that we don't want in any way to replace the church. We want the church to do what the church is designed to do. And so if a woman comes in who's had an abortion, we want to care for her by connecting her to a church who's doing that work. So we have some churches that we work with. We have a group, Watermark Church in Dallas has a post-abortive healing group they've been doing for 20 years, and they train other churches. So they're kind of our training arm. So if there's a church that says, we want to do that, we want to learn about that, I just connect them to Watermark, have Watermark come in and train that and begin the ministry in your church. Because, again, we could do it. We could figure it out and we could train and we've looked at the materials, we toyed with the idea, but I just don't want it. I don't want post-abortive healing stuff happening in the clinic. I want it to be in the church. Because here's one more quick thing, another great way that we do this. So we toyed with creating an app or creating a website, and then a friend of mine actually did it. God's providence at work. I love it. And he created a website where it was designed for a church and meeting mercy needs, so somebody needs help in the short term. It connects churches in an area, so I could go in and type in, Sally Joe needs to have her electric bill paid. It's $750. Our church can provide two, and there's alert goes out to these other churches, and they can say, well, we can do this much, we can do this much, and the church together meets her need. I wanted to do that because I don't want us to have a woman walk in and say, I need diapers for my two-year-old. I can't afford those. How am I going to? Well, we have diapers. And let's go back to this room, and we have diapers, and we have a stroller, and we have cribs, and we have all this stuff for you, and we're going to give it to you out of this storeroom. That's good. But how much better is it to sit here and say, you know what, we have a network of churches that will meet your need. You tell me exactly what you need. I'm going to sit here and type it out. And potentially within minutes, we start seeing responses. This church is going to meet that need. This church is going to meet that need. And the woman is able to see the Church of Jesus Christ is loving you, is caring for you. It's not some leftover stuff in a storeroom. It's the church. So we now have that in place. We're testing the whole thing because we test everything. So we're testing it in Pittsburgh because the guy that created it lives in Pittsburgh. So assuming it works, we'll ramp that up everywhere pretty quickly. So thank you very much. I'll be around. I'm going to stick around for worship, and I'll be around afterwards if there's more questions. But thank you so much for the time and for all you guys have done for Real Choices, now Curo, and supporting them over the years. We really appreciate it.
That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you.